You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. When you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess they can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone and purposely excuse me. Wanting my cake and eat it too. Wanting it both ways. Fame made me a balloon, cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. It was confusing, cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee of loosely a few things. Use it as a tool when I blew sleep.
Good Thursday morning to you. The 18th day of January. 2018. A lot of news going on. We'll talk about it today. So, the White House Chief of Staff did about a 20-minute interview with Fox News last night with Brett Baer. So, I want to play that for you in its entirety. So some interesting stuff. And it confirms everything that I've already told you. There's not a position Donald Trump takes that he won't change on. And there's what you say to get elected. For instance, you know, the capital of Jerusalem, the capital of Israel is Jerusalem. And we will not back down from that. Right? How many presidents have you heard say that? Only Donald Trump actually did it. So there's things you say to get elected, and so I said that. Some of the positions that he's taken are to get elected. And so anyway, the interview with General Kelly is very interesting. Very interesting. And General Kelly uniquely qualified for that job. He did two different tours. One, I believe his first time at OLA, the Office of Legislative Affairs, which is the Marine Corps' office in the Capitol. And what it does is it advises Congress on things that are significant to the Marine Corps. People would say it looks a lot like lobbying, but those who know that the Marine Corps by law is prohibited from lobbying, and so it can never do that. So there you have it. So he went there the first time, and I think he ran the House side of it. So there's an officer in charge of I believe a lieutenant colonel of the House, and there's an officer in charge of the Senate. They have staffs that work for them. They support, congressional delegation visits around the world, blah, 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 blah. So he went there the first time, and probably close to 20 years ago. And so he got a very intimate look at the way Congress operates. And so then he went back probably in the 2006 time frame. When he left, he was still there in 2006, but when he left Iraq in 2004, he went back to become the commanding general of the officer in charge. I don't know exactly what the appropriate verbiage is, but he was the OIC of all that. So he's had two tours up on Capitol Hill, and intimately familiar, and as the brigadier general there, he became the focus of Marine Corps policy, as it was communicated to Congress, and meeting with members and their staffs and explaining things, and the committee process and the budget process and all of that is what he did. So, you know, General Kelly uniquely qualified to be the chief of staff, right? And he served on big staffs, so he knows how they work. And so the interview with Brett Baer, very interesting yesterday. And so I'll play it for you in its entirety today. So we'll do that. And then it's Thursday, and I like to talk about about mental health on Thursday. And so Mike Musselman and I have mentioned Elizabeth Smart on at least two or three occasions on the program. And so somebody sent me an email and said, hey, I don't have the Lifetime channel, so I'm probably not going to be able to watch it. What did she say that you both found so compelling? So I cut up that audio, and it's probably five or six different clips of her speaking from anywhere from 30 seconds to a couple minutes, maybe 90 seconds, that they dropped into the program itself. So they would fade out of one, and they would fade to her, and then she would talk about why she made it, what she hoped people would get from it, and then comment on different parts of the experience. So I cut up that audio. You'll hear that. And I'll tell you what, and it's truly inspirational. It's truly inspirational for a young girl to have the outlook on life that she has is pretty impressive. But I want to share it with you under the guise of mental health, and that, you know, we as veterans, I mean, we certainly don't corner the market on pain. We certainly don't corner the market on post-traumatic stress. There are a lot of people out there that go through similar and honestly worse things than we have seen, you know. And it happens to them in their homes. It happens to them in their places of work, and they are incredibly traumatized and brutalized. So anyway, I think that's helpful for all of us to understand. That there's all kinds of people that go through this on a regular basis, and Elizabeth Smart, certainly an inspirational person in terms of putting that in the rearview mirror, and attempting to, while we all know that you'll never lose focus relative to it, we all know that you can use it as a platform to still do good things in your life. And I think that phrase is called post-traumatic growth. So, you'll hear that today, and then the Gunner's going to join us. Also, some of the news in the last 24 hours, pretty amazing. The Dow closes above 26,000. I want to talk about that. And if you haven't heard about what Apple has decided to do, pretty amazing. So there's an article in the Wall Street Journal, and let's go through some of the major wave tops, and pretty amazing stuff that's going on in the economy right now. You know, where does it go? What happens? You know, well, I guess we'll find out. But wow, Apple. Doing something that it said it would never do. Anyway, good morning to you. United States Marine Corps Band makes it official on this Thursday morning. So, good morning. Thank you. I also need to talk about the president's fake news award. Yeah, I changed my mind. I'm glad that he published what he published yesterday. And because I looked at the list of things that he threw out there, and I knew it would be an interesting list, but the media does not like when somebody holds a mirror up to them and says, this is wrong. You doing these things. And most, to me, the worst ones are the ones where they were edited. That connotes some type of premeditation. Right? That's what Katie Couric got caught doing. That's what Dan Rather got caught doing. Editing to create an illusion. It simply didn't happen. And so I think the president, and I just saw Marco Rubio talking about, politics covered as entertainment. Where, you know, it's okay to play fast and loose with the illusion of the truth. So I think that we're going through a bit of a transformation with the media. And I think Donald Trump is one of the guys in the arena that pushes back. I said yesterday, gone are the days of Walter Cronkite. Gone are those days. Okay? The people that sit at the anchor desks at most of these news organizations don't have very much in common with Walter Cronkite. They're not as professional. They're not as devoted to their craft. They're not him. And the days of news being reported, there's too much business involved in it for our ratings to go down, right? It affects the bottom line for the corporation. These are flagship programs. This is where we make our money. It's got to get ratings, so it's got to do this. And so I think the president quite rightly pushes back. And I don't think that politicians or anybody maligned by an irresponsible media should have to take it. So, with that said, General Kelly was on with Brett Baird yesterday. This is this version of the Marine Corps hymn dedicated to General John Kelly. He said that he was doing the most important work he's ever had. And I said earlier, he's uniquely qualified. And so who is the guy going over to the Hill to see what's going on, to advise the president? John Kelly is one of the most important guys on the planet right now. Awesome. And he's uniquely qualified for it. Down to earth, smart as smart can be, right? But he's a savvy guy. Okay, joined the Merchant Marine at 18. After he dropped out of college. Sailing around the world, checking it out. So, this is dedicated to John Kelly. And you'll hear from him here probably towards the bottom of the hour. After we do news headlines. But a guy in an absolutely critical spot for our country. At a critical time in our nation's history, a time when we confront a radical regime that seeks to possess nuclear weapons with a leader who has shown no capacity for either restraint and then the specter of who will he sell them to? And all this work relative to nuclear nonproliferation goes down the tube. Who does he sell it to? So, with all that said, here's to General John Kelly.
Yeah. America. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
Quantico is sunny in 27. Camp Lejeune, sunny in 28. Granbury, Texas, clouds in 25. Montana, clouds in 43. What's wrong with that picture? 29 Palms, sun in 49. Camp Pendleton, clouds in 45. Camp Pendleton in Montana, same temperature. Okinawa, dark, cloudy, and 67 degrees. Mars has warmed up a little bit, clear, dark, and 51. At the home of All Marine Radio, mostly sunny and 52. Wind chill sits at 52 degrees. Looking for a high of 72 under partly cloudy skies today. 62 tomorrow with some rain in the forecast. And then downright chilly on Saturday, a high of only 60. That is a look at your weather. We will check out news headlines coming up next on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world, leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts with 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug, scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global Star Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global Stock Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the stock community should be aware of.
The Global Stock Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Check the news on a Thursday here. And then we'll listen to the chief of staff of the White House. He's got to have one of the most interesting jobs on the planet. Maybe the most interesting. A bunch of stuff going on in the world relative to the American military and the Marine Corps. Marine Corps Times, top of the fold article is about an F-18 Charlie Hornet crash. This is last October. An F-18 Charlie with VMFA 251 crashed on the runway at the Marine Corps Air Ground Combat Station, 29 Palms, causing the pilot to eject. The pilot survived, was treated at the Naval Hospital at 29 Palms. The investigation finds the two primary factors led to unrecognized loss of situational awareness. One, the approach and the airfield lighting not being turned on at sunset, and two, relatively low proficiency and flight experience, investigation reads. Proper training and familiarization with takeoff and landing and surrounding terrain could have mitigated these issues altogether, the investigation found. The completed investigation was obtained by Marine Corps Times for Freedom of Information Act request. The pilot returning from an urban close air support exercise was attempting to land his aircraft at sunset. The pilot mistook a dirt section of the runway and a parallel taxiway and was confused by flashing lights from a section of AH-1 helicopters, lost control of the aircraft as it touched down. So he mistook a dirt section of the runway and a parallel taxiway. So essentially landing on the wrong piece of asphalt, in this case maybe the dirt. Before the aircraft's landing approach, the flight lead, also piloting an FA-18, had radioed the towers to have the runway lights turned on. Investigators found issues stemming from management of the runway lights. High use of rotary wing aircraft and nighttime operations resulting in an unwritten standard operating procedures. Lights at the runway were considered user requested. This allowed aircraft conducting nighttime flying with the aid of night vision goggles not to be impacted by the lights. However, FAA and military orders require runway lights to be turned on at sunset, and operation of lights must be controlled by the air traffic control tower. The ATC is not authorized to delegate its authority, the investigation concluded. Moreover, actual physical control of the lights was not located in the ATC tower, which resulted in sometimes a 10-minute delay in operating lights. The pilot in question had consistently had below average scores in training and had relatively low flight hours compared to his peers, and had several unsatisfactory events while at the RAG, which is a training squadron, right? The below average training progression coupled with relatively low flight experience, which had been exacerbated by limited flight time caused by low aircraft availability rates, contributed to the risk of the incident, the investigation reads. From January to September of 2016, the pilot of the crashed F-18 only averaged 7.1 flight hours a month, while the entire squadron averaged 9.4. Just before the training, the pilot missed multiple simulation exercises, some that focused on takeoff and landing at the airfield, because he was on leave for 2 weeks. From August until mid-October, he participated in 9 close air support simulations, mostly focused on the execution of the upcoming training mission, but not landings or takeoffs. So there you have it. Probably not a surprise, right? You have a low proficiency pilot. You have him with low number of hours, and he's trying to land at twilight. But you know, all that said, you request the lights to be turned on, and it takes 10 minutes for them to do that. Maybe you don't have 10 minutes of fuel to burn, and so you're going to land. And then I guess no surprise that somebody tries to land in the dirt. We continue to follow a story that was broke by the San Diego Union-Tribune. And it's a one Marine was killed at the School of Infantry at Camp Pendleton. Another Marine is in custody. Private First Class Ethan A. Barkley Waberpaul, assigned to Lima Company, headquarters and service at SOI West, was killed in the incident. He was 18 years old, had just entered the Marine Corps in July. Marine Corps spokesman said the incident occurred on board Camp Pendleton at the School of Infantry West. They declined to offer any additional information. The name of the Marine in confinement, also assigned to the same unit, will not be released at this time. So, we'll continue to follow that. I've had people email me with different versions of it, and just hard to believe, honestly. Somebody's going to murder somebody, take their life, and throw away their own. So, it's just hard to believe, honestly. The some other interesting stories, not only in Marine Corps times, but also in the early bird. One is the American commitment in Syria. And so, Secretary of State, who's had an awful low profile lately, was in Palo Alto yesterday. He appeared at an event with Condoleezza Rice at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University. He was quoted as saying that the U.S. commitment to Syria would be maintained. And its military presence there, our military presence there, to prevent an Islamic State resurgence. He said the United States would also push for broader political changes in the Mideast country. So, essentially, regime change. Tillerson stressed that U.S. forces would remain in Syria for the foreseeable future as Donald Trump and his aides implement a new strategy to stabilize Syria, where a civil war has killed as many as 500,000 people and created millions of refugees since 2011. There are currently some 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria, mostly training local forces to root out the remaining extremist stronghold. The most critical part is, right, you've ejected ISIS, and now what? Do you just walk away from it and allow ISIS to migrate back? What do you do in its aftermath? And this is all about winning the peace, right? So thankfully we have people not only in the White House and General Kelly who understand that, but at the Department of Defense and Secretary Mattis, General Dunford, that you do the fighting to get to this point. So now is a critical time in Syria. Let us be clear. This is a quote from Tillerson. Let us be clear. The United States will maintain a military presence in Syria focused on ensuring ISIS cannot reemerge. We cannot allow history to repeat itself in Syria. ISIS presently has one foot in the grave. And by maintaining an American military presence in Syria until the full and complete defeat of ISIS is achieved, we will soon have two. Tillerson also talked about isolating the Assad regime and achieving the American objective of stabilization. Washington won't allow international reconstruction aid to flow to any part of Syria under Assad's control, he said. It will discourage countries from trading with his government. Quote, instead, we will encourage international assistance to rebuild the areas the global coalition and its local partners have liberated, suggesting that such an approach might assure Assad resign. Once Assad has gone from power, the United States will gladly encourage the normalization of economic relationships between Syria and other nations. Interesting. And there's a message to Iran in all of that as well. This morning. Nikki Haley is in the news talking about Afghanistan. And Nikki Haley, probably one of the rising stars of the Trump administration. And she's a baller at the United Nations. She lets it rip. And she's been something what will she be? She's been awesome. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley said Wednesday that the Trump administration's policy in Afghanistan is working, saying talks between the government and Taliban extremists and a peace process are closer than ever before. She called a weekend trip to Afghanistan by the U.N. Security Council great because, quote, we could see dramatic changes in terms of what U.S. policy has been doing. She goes on, quote, the U.S. policy in Afghanistan is working. We are seeing that we are closer to talks with the Taliban and the peace process than we've ever seen before. And I think we really are going to work towards a peace process, with the goal being that we do not want Afghanistan to be a safe haven for terrorism anymore. Kazakhstan's U.N. ambassador, Karyat Umaryov, yeah, how about that? The current council president who led the trip said members were concerned, quote, with the persistence of insecurity, especially with the intensification of terrorism activities in the north and east of Afghanistan and the regrouping of foreign fighters coming out of Syria and Iraq in Afghanistan. He said that the council urged the intensification of peace and reconciliation efforts, knowing that the military solution cannot be sufficient without a political one. Afghanistan's scheduled to hold elections later on this year. And so that's a big deal. But again, I think what you saw in Syria, Iraq, is the continuing in Afghanistan, all the sorties that were being flown in Syria, Afghanistan, and Syria, Iraq have now migrated. The majority of those have migrated over to Afghanistan. And so the Taliban will feel it. They will feel it. The people that I know, that I deal with, they have told me that, hey, what you knew in Afghanistan, the Afghan military is better than that now. And so with our support and with their own aviation support, they are able to go and whoop it off. And so, so we'll see. But that blueprint continues to be used. You know this, but B-52 bombers have been joined by B-2 bombers and B-1 bombers in Guam for the second time in history. Now, I would tell you, do you remember when we had 3 aircraft carriers? Right. Some of that was just overlapping of 2 deployments. All right. Before we get our panties in a knot, so not over what's going on, I believe there's some of that going on at in Guam. But nonetheless, the message is clear that we are not dialing it down in the Pacific. That we are, if anything, dialing it up. So that's a look at Marine Corps Times. There's an interesting story in Task and Purpose about a Marine Corps gunnery sergeant, Vietnam era. And it's written by a guy who's been on the program, a guy named Richard Sisk. And Task and Purpose collects military stories from other websites. So if you look at it, you'll see a conglomeration of stuff. With backing from Secretary Mattis, paperwork to upgrade the Navy Cross awarded to then Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant John Canley to the Medal of Honor for his actions during the Battle of Hue City in 1968 was forwarded to Donald Trump on Friday. After giving careful consideration to the nomination, I agree that then Gunnery Sergeant Canley's actions merit the award of the Medal of Honor, Mattis said last month in a letter to Representative Julia Brownlee, a Democrat from California, Canley's chief sponsor in Congress. Mattis noted that Congress would first have to waive the 5-year limit for the recommendation, but once that happened, I will provide my endorsement to the president. So, so hopefully we will see another Marine Corps Medal of Honor recipient. And the article documents the kind of leader he was. He was with the Alpha Company, 1st Battalion, 1st Marines. They had been up at Contien prior to this. And those of you who that have read about Contien, right up just south of the DMZ, yeah, holy shit, man. Yeah, do a little reading about Contien. And honestly, it is grown up type stuff. We'll wait till the president signs it, but I think that would be just a matter of course. And interesting stuff. So that's on Task and Purpose this morning. And then the top 5 on Early Bird. 1, Turkey says it could act in Syria unless the U.S. draws support for Kurdish forces. So this is an article that's in Reuters. And again, we've been talking about this for months now. The fate of the Kurds. Turkey said Wednesday it would not hesitate to take action in Syria's Afrin district and other areas unless the United States withdrew support for a Kurdish-led force there. But Washington denied such plans and said some people have misspoken. Turkish President Erdogan has repeatedly warned of an imminent incursion in Afrin after Washington said it would help the Syrian Democratic Force, the SDF, led by the Kurdish YPG militia, set up a new 30,000-strong border force. The plan has infuriated Turkey, which considers the Syrian YPG as an extension of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK militant group, which it has fought an insurgency with since 1984. The PKK is considered a terrorist group by the European Union, Turkey, and the United States. So, that going on. Number two, B-2 bombers joined B-2s and B-1s in Guam for a second time in history. Get you up to snuff on that. The B-2s are from Barksdale Air Force Base, deployed to Anderson Air Force Base, along with about 300 airmen. The aircraft and personnel will support the U.S. Pacific Command's continuous bomber presence missions, replacing 6 B-1B Lancer bombers, which are scheduled to return home to Ellsworth Air Force Base in South Dakota at the end of the month. Now, so the question will become at the end of the question will be at the end of the month, will does that deployment get extended? So for at least a few days, all three types of bombers, nuclear-capable B-2s, B-52s, and conventional B-1Bs, will be flying together out of U.S. territory in the Pacific. So they have long and short of that. So, again, look to see if anything comes out of that. Elsewhere, number three this morning on the hit list. This is from Defense News. Can Mattis make Defense National Strategy great again? This story is written from Brussels. When the Pentagon rolls out the National Defense Strategy on January 19th, that would be tomorrow, expect a lot of statements about how it will serve as a definitive document, one that will guide the Pentagon for years to come. But the Pentagon has a reputation as a building filled with well-intentioned, game-changing documents that are delivered and ignored. So will the strategy be any different? Certainly those involved in the planning are hopeful. In December, Deputy Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan said that Jim Mattis-led team running the Pentagon is dedicated to keeping the document vital. Shanahan goes on, I think if anybody knows Secretary Mattis or looks at his history, he's not inclined to publish documents or give guidance that he doesn't actually intend to execute, Dunford said. Any implementation plan is about leadership, and I have a high degree of confidence that the Secretary is going to drive implementation of the NDS. And you can see Dunford saying that with a little bit of a smile. Any implementation plan is about leadership, and I have a high degree of confidence. I saw an image earlier today of the president sitting at a table with Secretary Mattis to his right, which would be our left as we're looking at the picture, and Mattis to his left, which would be our right. So think about this. In 2004, the 1st Marine Division, Mattis sat in the center. Dunford sat to our left as we're staring at him, and Kelly sat to his right. Those guys ran the 1st Marine, the Blue Diamond, in 2004. And I will have to tell you, it was a pretty tight ship. All right, smart guys asking hard questions. And you better have your ass and your brain wired together when you go to those meetings. Fourth story on in today's top five. As ISIS threat fades, the fight over who gets credit rises. Who cares about that, right? I guess some people do, but who deserves the credit for it? Lawmakers on Capitol Hill have shifted to the next looming fight, deciding who deserves credit. Only, right? Capitol Hill. Anyway, Yeah. I don't know. American foreign policy, come on, man. Get your act together. And then we already covered it, but the number five story, the U.S. signals an open-ended presence in Syria. So that would be the fifth story on in the top five. Other stories. One out of the San Diego Union is about Marine Corps recruiting and Marine Corps training. Story is there's a picture of Bill Journey, Brigadier General in the United States Marine Corps. I don't know him, but I have friends that know him. And goes a little bit like this. The Marines are looking for a few good men and women and got more than they wanted last year. That was part of the report Marine Brigadier General Bill Journey gave to the San Diego Military Affairs Council on Wednesday morning at Point Loma Naval Base. Competing with higher education, the other services, and private industry, it is an improving economy. The Corps not only met recruiting goals, but surpassed them in both numbers and quality of entry-level Marines. Journey said, quote, this past year we had historical success, which exceeded the last 10 years since 2008 in finding and selecting above and beyond what we were actually looking for, Journey said. A career infantryman, whose commands include San Diego's boot camp, where 500 recruits graduate weekly and 750 recruiting offices peppering the continental United States, mostly west of the Mississippi River, plus Alaska, Guam, and Hawaii. Almost 100% are high school graduates. Over three-fourths are in the upper mental categories for testing, and we started the year off with having already selected about 55% of what I knew I needed to enlist this coming year. The Marine Corps annually brings in about 38,000 recruits into the fleet, but regulations guide enlistment standards. 9 out of every 10 candidates for the service must have a high school diploma, and all entrants must pass a battery of mental aptitude and physical fitness tests, including a background check. This is part of the story that I think is interesting, the demographics of the country. Competition is fierce, right, to recruit young people in the United States. Army research estimate that only 5.7 million youngsters are qualified to serve. That's about 1 out of every 6 young people in the United States is qualified, and far fewer express any propensity to enlist. About 68% of the Marine Corps is aged 25 years or younger. How about that? That's in the San Diego Union this morning. We should see if we can get General Journey on. I got to figure out which one of my friends are buddies with him. But I've heard his name throughout my life, but I've never met him. The kind of an interesting story. Fenway Park's gonna host an Army Navy baseball game. Never heard of that before. In April, so congratulations to the Bass and Red Sox. All right, we're gonna take a break now. When we come back, you're gonna hear John Kelly, and you're gonna hear him. He got interviewed yesterday on Fox News by Brett Baird. Brett Baird does a show that I think Pacific time comes on at about 5 o'clock. And so you are going to go ahead and hear that interview in its entirety, about 20 minutes. And then and I'll stop it to comment appropriately, as you might think I might. But Kelly is at a unique place in American history, uniquely qualified for the job. Why do I say that? One, as I said earlier, his previous tours, he knows many of the members of, for instance, He and Lindsey Graham have got after each other this week a little bit. And but he's known Lindsey Graham for 20 years. So he has that background on Capitol Hill. He knows the process. He knows the players. He knows how it works. So so he's no stranger to it. He also came to the to the chief of staff office as he was his initial position was as the secretary for the Department of Homeland Affairs. Now he came to that after being the head of Southcom, and so intimately familiar with the issues on our border, and so he met with those committees as a four-star general, listened to them, knew the people, many of the people that are on those committees from his time at Office of Legislative Affairs. So in a day and age where you have national security concerns, you have border concerns, and you're trying to make deals with Congress, John Kelly is he's made for it, honestly, by virtue of his experience. So, yeah, wow. So we'll take a break. When we come back, you'll hear John Kelly in his own words with Brett Baird. And he has some very, very interesting things to say about the president, about the president's willingness to compromise, about the president's tweeting, and about this whole process of DACA and getting a deal done with DACA. And I will tell you, the I'll tease it, though. He's very confident that a deal is going to be reached on DACA, that the major pieces are in place on DACA. So I don't think, and it's, I think it's interesting myself, Donald Trump's a deal maker. He is not going to allow campaign rhetoric to stop a deal that advances the American agenda, which is very interesting. And then after we talk and beat up Kelly, I want to talk about the Apple deal. And then that tax deal and what it means for businesses that are bringing money back into the country. And also the amount of money that is forecasted that will be brought back into the country, which is pretty staggering. So don't touch that dial. And then hopefully we'll have time in the next hour, but we'll also talk about Elizabeth Smart. So Elizabeth Smart, extremely interesting in terms of her view of life post-trauma. So I've got a series of audio cuts that from her little show. You are going to hear those. So don't touch that dial. On Thursday, more of Almarine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Nah. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts with 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOC community should be aware of.
The Global SOC Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsocfoundation.org/Marine.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. .01 on a Thursday. All right, I talked about General Kelly here this morning, and really, I mean, the fact that he's a friend of mine is pretty cool. But professionally, he has this incredible background that brings him to where he is today. And I might add, he has the personality, the demeanor. He's a big boy, right? He doesn't get his nose out of joint. He understands. He's served at high levels. He understands the egos involved sometimes that people bring. He doesn't bring too much of an ego. And he's got a fun personality too. So he joined Brett Baird. Brett Baird, I believe, is a favorite of his. And I think as news guys go, I think that Brett Baird right now is about as close as you could come to a throwback news guy. He is I believe he's a hard news guy. I think he's a fair news guy. And he doesn't play the nefarious agenda, right? and he's willing to get after the president when that's certainly appropriate. And so General Kelly did a piece with him. It was before the election, and I want to say he called out. He had very, very pointed things to say about standards and the whole women in the infantry and women in combat arms issue. And he's very pointed about standards, about as long as the standards aren't eroded. And he said, but that's not normally the way it works. I should get that. So anyway, and so I was talking to him about coming on, and he said, and then out of the blue one day, he shot me. He came on, and then he shot me an email, and he said, hey, check out what I did with Brett Baer. Let me know what you think. So, and he's always good, but he was very pointed, which, you know, a lot of times as people go up the food chain, they get, you know, it's more political speak, it's more what's appropriate, right? And it's less, but, you know, Kelly's, you know, tends to speak his mind. He's very polished. He tends not to get his ass in a ringer, but, also he's not afraid to speak his mind. So again, he appears with Brett Baer. And I believe he believes that Baird's a fair guy. So, this from Fox News yesterday. It runs about 18 minutes. Stand by.
White House Chief of Staff John Kelly joins us now for a Fox News exclusive tonight. Thank you, sir, for being here.
Thanks.
First, as you sit here, are you confident the administration and congressional leadership has the votes for a short-term funding to avoid a government shutdown Friday?
I spent a fair amount of time on the Hill today speaking to members of Congress, both sides of the aisle, and frankly, both sides of the Hill, and it would seem that they have the votes to continue funding the military, take care of the child health care issue, and perhaps some other things. So, as I understand it, they have the votes, and they're fairly confident.
It's not really what you wanted, but that's what...
No, I mean, the CRs get in the way of an awful lot of things, but they are the reality of life in Washington.
Your time on the Hill today got some headlines. The Washington Post has a story that says Kelly calls some of Trump's campaign pledges on immigration wall uninformed, meeting attendees say. White House Chief of Staff John Kelly told Democratic lawmakers Wednesday the United States will never construct a physical wall along the entire stretch of the U.S.-Mexico border, and that some of President Trump's campaign promises on immigration were uninformed. Comments put Kelly at odds with Trump, who repeatedly said during his presidential campaign that he would build a border wall that Mexico would pay for, not the U.S. taxpayers. Quote, concrete wall would be good only certain places, adding, saying manpower and drone technology should suffice in some parts. Kelly also saying that there will be no wall that Mexico will pay for. Your response to that?
Well, I met at my request today with the the House Hispanic Caucus. I've done that three other times when I was at DHS. I met with them today and had a discussion about a range of issues. I was mostly listening because I've heard them so many other times, and they know what the administration perspective is. But in any event, as we talked about things, where this president is and how much he wants to deal with this DACA issue and take it away, I told him that, you know, there's been an evolutionary process that this president has gone through as a campaign, and I pointed out to all of the members that were in the room that they all say things during the course of campaigns that may or may not be fully informed. But this president...
Now, again, we all know that's putting it delicately, right? May or may not be informed. And he goes on to make it the point a number of times, I think, in the interview, that campaigning and governing are two drastically different things. And so what you're seeing is the migration of the Trump pledge, and I believe the president has tweeted about it, in that, you know, his conception of the wall was never a physical barrier from the Pacific Ocean to the Gulf of Mexico. Now, watch somebody go ahead and produce audio that says someplace him saying that, a big shiny wall the whole way. Anyway, so the president's carving out his own wiggle room. And, you know what, again, which all politicians do. But again, Donald Trump held to a little bit different standard. But, so again, but make no mistake, they all do it.
And if you've seen what he's done, he has changed the way he's looked at a number of things. He's adjusted the way he's looked at the South Asia strategy, Afghanistan. He's very definitely changed his attitude towards the DACA issue. And even the wall, once we briefed him when I was at DHS and told him that the real experts on defending the southwest border, the Customs and Border Protection men and women, came in, did a survey of the border. There are places where hydrographically, geographically, a wall would not be realistic. There are other parts of the southwest border that are so wild and untamed that there is no traffic that goes through them. There's other places, we think about 800 miles additional wall to include the 600 that are already in place, the fencing, would suffice. So he has evolved in the way he's looked at things. Campaign to governing are two different things, and this president is very, very flexible in terms of what is within the realm of the possible.
And Mexico's not going to pay.
That we have some ideas on how things like visa fees, renegotiation on NAFTA and what that would mean to our economy. So in one way or another, it's possible that we could get the revenue from Mexico, but not directly from their government.
The reason you're at this point with Congress is because this bigger funding DACA border security deal never came through. Let me take you back to Tuesday, that bipartisan meeting at the White House, and then what Senator Graham is saying since.
You folks are going to have to come up with a solution. And if you do, I'm going to sign that solution. I'll take the heat. I don't care.
Those who think that we're going to get away as Republicans, we're getting all we want on the fence now, and we'll deal with the kids later, the DREAM Act population, closer to March 5th when their back's against the wall. That is nuts.
Somehow, by 12 o'clock on Thursday, something happened, and I don't think he was well served by his staff. I think General Kelly's a fine man, but he's also part of the staff.
So your reaction to that, let's go through the TikTok on Thursday. What happens?
Well, I would tell you, first of all, that what I'm about to describe to you is the process I put in place when I became the Chief of Staff to make sure that the President of the United States is informed across the spectrum of an issue and he hears both sides of the story, pros and cons, and everything in between. There was an early morning phone call from one of the senators that said that I was conferenced in on, that said that they had come...
Durbin calls.
They had come with a solution. And the president was ecstatic. He said, we've got money for the wall. We've got the various other things that the president is interested in, the end of chain or family-based migration and the end of the visa lottery and money for the wall. The president was thrilled.
Now, the interesting part of this is now you're going to see Kelly's experience kick in. All right. So this small focus group of senators calls and says, hey, we've got a deal. Okay. Now, listen to his explanation of what happens next. All right, Kelly's no dope, okay? So you're telling me you've got some kind of an agreement, and now he begins to explore with other friends. Again, now this speaks to what he can provide the president based on 20 years of experience on Capitol Hill. Well, not 20 years, but two different tours, probably, what, 6-7 years on Capitol Hill together. And knowing these guys for 20 years, and then being in a 4-star level command, yada, yada, yada. So you'll hear he gets this phone call, and then he begins to pull the string on it and check it out.
Invited them over. So I then called other members of the Senate, because I was surprised at how fast this was happening, other members of the Senate that are involved in this whole process, and they were completely uninformed that there had been a bipartisan initiative led by both Senators Durbin and Graham, apparently. They were uninformed of that, and these are men that have been informed or have been involved in this process. So I then went over to the Hill to talk to someone who's been a friend for 20 years and remains a friend, Senator Graham. I knew him in the House when he was a freshman and all the way up to this point. Got his impression of what this deal was. But it was clear to me that, again, it was bipartisan, no doubt, but it was from a kind of a focus group of bipartisan senators. I then went over to the House side to talk to McCarthy, Congressman McCarthy, Congressman Goodlatte, and the Speaker to find out if that they had been involved in this process. They had not been. So at that point, again, I had two senators coming over with what I would characterize as a possible solution to the DACA issue, but it certainly occupies one end of the spectrum. So the president then asked that we invite some other senators and members of the House to come over. So you know,
the president asked for that.
He asked for that. And again, it's how I now force the staff to do business. I don't want the president to hear one side of a story. The president likes to talk about issues. He likes to hear everyone's side. He prefers, or not prefers, but he certainly enjoys the intellectual discussion and wants people to raise issues that perhaps are issues that he doesn't believe in.
So does he decide it's a bad deal once he starts
hearing
the
details? Well, in the course of the conversation, you know, he said, well, this is certainly you know, something we can talk about, but this is not what I had in mind. But it's a start point, and we can talk about it. Just like Mr. Goodlatte, who was there, he has a proposed bill that is a great start point to talk about. So this begins the process. I went over the Hill today, as you indicate, to talk to the Hispanic caucus, and then had a small group meeting with Senator Durbin and Steny Hoyer on the Democratic side, and the leader of the Hispanic caucus was there on their side as well, Senator Cornyn, Senator, and Congressman McCarthy, and had a great conversation, and this will lead eventually to, I believe, a solution to DACA.
All right.
Okay. Now, did you hear that? This will lead, I believe, to a solution on DACA. Okay, so I'm going to play that one more time. Okay, listen to that. Now, I don't know enough's been made of this because I've watched the news. So in this broader series of discussions that Kelly has, he believes that that there is the basis of an agreement on DACA. Okay, so listen to that one more time.
This was there on their side as well. Senator Cornyn, Senator, and Congressman McCarthy, and had a great conversation, and this will lead eventually to, I believe, a solution to DACA.
All right, so just...
Wow. Wow. You know, and it almost makes me laugh. Here's a good friend of yours that's dealing with the most pressing issues, and he's become, you know... he's become the power broker, in terms of, you know, going up and ferreting out the truth. You know, what's real? What's up from down? Where do we go? Who's got the votes? Is this real? And, you know, again, I think what Senator Graham's irritated about is, I don't want to say he got his pants pulled down, but, you know, they had a group of six. And then Kelly broadens the group, and then everybody else in the group says, what? No. Well, then that's not much of a place to start, right? We could certainly start the discussion from there, but when everybody else that's a power broker and in on the discussion hears what you have to say and says, that's not going to work, then to me, then you begin the discussion from there and you hammer it out. So interesting stuff. It continues.
Quickly, some specifics. What does the president need to see on chain migration to bless the DACA deal?
The president sees that we should control that nuclear family, that people that qualify to come into the United States as immigrants, if they're married, of course, their wife would come in. If they have minor children, the minor children will come in. But not the parents, not the extended families. So that's where he is right now. This is, you know, we can talk about this, but that's where he is.
And then is it a phase issue? Is it a phase one, phase two? And how much money does he need for the wall to bless this deal?
We think roughly 700 miles of wall, additional wall, to include, and also to include the fencing that's there. Some of it's only barriers to vehicle traffic. About $20 billion.
So that's not going to happen before Friday.
Unlikely, but again, there's two things, and I reminded the Hispanic caucus today. When I was at DHS, I pleaded with the United States Congress to come up with a solution because DACA was not going to stand the legal test. It didn't stand the legal test. We were sued. It had to go away. I then asked the president to give an additional 6 months to give the United States Congress an opportunity to sit down and work this out. Both sides of the aisle, both sides of the hill. And we're right in the middle of that right now. The agreement or the extension ends on the 5th of March. There's no doubt in my mind there's going to be a deal, so long as men and women on both sides are willing to talk.
All right, a couple other things. We asked people on social media to weigh in if they had questions. One person, Mark, at Texas Eyelid Doc, says, I would ask you if he ever discusses with the president how his random, unfiltered tweets step on his message, or have you given up?
As I've said many times, I was not put in this job to change the way the President of the United States does business. I was put in the job to make sure the staff process better informs him on a range of issues. He oftentimes asks me, hey, I'm thinking of reinforcing whatever the message is on that given period of time with a tweet. What do you think? And absolutely. Sometimes he doesn't ask me that. He doesn't have to ask me that. He is his own man in this regard, and he feels very, very strongly that he's able to reach the American people out in Peoria and Montana and in central Wyoming through his tweets, because he doesn't feel as though he gets a completely fair shake from the media.
Now, you've often said that your role is not to control President Trump. You're supposed to, deal with his schedule, the flow of information, not intervene. It's been reported that you did intervene recently following the tweet the president sent last week suggesting his opposition to Section 702 surveillance. An hour and a half later, another tweet seemed more in line with the administration policy. Is that correct? You intervened?
I spoke to the president about the issue. It's an important issue. The FISA reauthorization. Very, very important. Yep. Very, very important to law enforcement. He has strong feelings on personal privacy. Sent out the first tweet, sent out the second tweet. He and I talk constantly. Weekends, early mornings, late at night, we talk constantly. He bounces ideas off of me. I'm very proud of the fact that he respects my opinion. But again, he's the President of the United States. He's got his own way of doing business. But again, I see a man who is can change his mind when the facts and the data and the staff work and the conversation brings them to a different conclusion.
We've spent much of the last week hearing from various lawmakers and critics of the president saying that he is racist. Today, in a speech today, Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake, you heard some of it, said the president's description of the press as fake news is Stalin-esque. Here's another piece.
Not only has the past year seen an American president borrow despotic language to refer to the free press, but it seems he has now, in turn, inspired dictators and authoritarians with his own language.
How do you respond to all that?
I think it's unfortunate that he would do that. I think he's completely wrong. It more than suggests to me that I just think he's completely wrong. I think it's beneath him, but he is a United States senator, and he has his opinions. And he can voice them any way he wants, I guess.
Former White House Chief Strategist Steve Bannon testified yesterday. Mm-hmm. Didn't answer a lot of questions. Refused to answer some before the House Intel Committee. Did the White House tell him to invoke executive privilege?
No. Steve has had very, very little contact with the White House since he left. I know Steve a little bit, not very well. He left the White House. And has certainly never returned to the White House, and with the exception of a few phone calls here and there, very, very little contact with the White House. And I certainly have never spoke to him since he left.
This White House has seen a lot of turmoil, a lot of turnover, resignations, firings, a partial list here on the screen. A lot of folks. It's not what you usually see in an...
Let me point out, it was kind of interesting that Sarah Huckabee Sanders yesterday, in when she was asked about Bannon and his claim of executive privilege, she made no comment whether the White House had been in touch with him. She commented on executive privilege, but there seemed to be daylight between Kelly's, in fact, has Bannon been in been in contact with the White House about executive privilege. Baird gets the word privilege out of his mouth, and Kelly says no. not, well, there have been talks, but no real substantive content. None of that. No. And so there seemed to be a little bit of daylight there. We'll see how they footnote that today as Kelly's appearance is creating the need for footnotes.
Administration this early. How do you explain that?
I would tell you that it's very interesting. The every administration, the first year or so, has a fair amount of turmoil. I think that's fair to say. It is interesting to me as someone who has served on many, many staffs in my previous career, that there's probably only one staff that I know of, certainly, that on the 19th of January in a given year is fully staffed up and functioning, and the next day they're all gone, and there's new people in the job. And so I would tell you, as I said many times, campaigning is very, very different than governing. It's really, really hard work to govern at this level. And some people that were perhaps involved in the campaign didn't make that transition. I came to the job 6 months after this, almost 7 months after this administration took over. And I would tell you from, I won't comment before, but
there's a lot of that book that got a lot of attention.
All of it. The day after I took over, we fundamentally focused on better staff work, stop this foolish backbiting leaking, which has all but stopped, and serve the president, because to serve him well, he succeeds, and whether you voted for him or not, whether you like him or not, if he succeeds, the nation succeeds. Look at the economy. Look at what's going on. If he fails, the nation fails.
Two quick things. North Korea seems like they've had negotiations. Obviously, the Olympics changes the equation. But if Kim Jong-un does not abandon his nuclear program, is the U.S. headed for war?
I hope not. But I don't think, you know, this is one of those things that landed on this president's lap. It's been in the process for 25 years. We've kicked the can down the road. The problem at this point in time is there's no road left. We have to deal with this guy. He cannot have a deliverable atomic weapon that can reach the United States reliably. It just cannot be. Obviously, the president would much prefer to do this in alliance with every other nation of goodwill to convince this guy that is not in his interest. But I believe we're out of road. There's
second
no more place to kick this can.
Second interview in as many weeks, he wouldn't answer the question whether he's talked to Kim Jong-un. Has he?
He is. There are open channels, but I prefer not to comment on that. But there are a lot of people trying to help out here. And the president calls numerous national leaders, Chinese as an example, on a regular basis. Japan, Korea, others on a regular basis. Our ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, works that very, very hard, and has gotten some great votes in the Security Council. But at the end of the day, this president is committed to ensuring the nation's safety.
Last thing. You have said that this is the toughest job you've ever had, tougher than being a combatant commander in Iraq. Are you in this for the long haul?
I am. This is not only the toughest job I've ever had, but it is, and I've done a lot of things in my life. This is the most important thing I've ever done in my life. I got no reason to be doing this other than my sense of service to the country. That's my number one motivation, always has been for my whole life. So no heroics there. Never wanted to ever work another regular job in my life. This ain't a regular job. But I am in this for the long haul. It is the most important thing I've ever done in my life, because if the administration fails, if the President of the United States is uninformed one time and makes the wrong decision, that's on me. And those decisions at his level are so critical that people's lives obviously depend on it. So I'm in for the long haul.
Well, thank you for your service, sir, and we appreciate your time tonight.
Thanks, Brett.
John Kelly with Brett Baer. Now, there's been already been footnotes to that this morning, the president tweeting out that the wall is the wall. It's always been my conception. But again, then there's a disconnect between what people thought he meant and what he meant. And So Kelly has the privilege of footnoting that and saying that there's about 800 miles of fence, some of which needs to be built, some of which needs to be repaired or replaced, and then Mother Nature does a fair amount of its own. But I just want to point out the wall, okay? The wall, the wall, the wall, the wall, the wall. Now, I looked up some statistics yesterday as, let me find them here. I looked up some statistics yesterday because I saw some get put on the air by Fox, and I was like, let me find those numbers. And so, pretty amazing. Start in Arizona. Tucson and Yuma, okay? In 2001, there was, this is in Tucson, there was 449,675 apprehensions in 2001. Now, with increased border protection and the wall that got built there, okay, a 92% drop in the number of apprehensions. All right, that is now down to 38,675. 92% drop. So, I mean, don't tell me that it doesn't work. The people that say, oh, you know, those. Okay, so let's go to Yuma. Home of Marine Corps Air Station Yuma. In 2001, 178,385 apprehensions at Yuma. In 2017, 12,847, a 93% drop in the number of people detained by Border Patrol agents. And I think what they would tell you is that this issue is now manageable for us, as opposed to being out of control. A wall. Let's talk about El Centro in California. So, and that is, I believe, Yuma. I haven't found numbers for Nogales yet, but I believe that Tucson was the number one spot for border crossing. Almost 500,000 apprehensions. San Diego, 173,852 in 2001 people were apprehended in El Centro. In 2017, 18,663, an 89% drop in the number of people apprehended at El Centro. In San Diego, at the San Ysidro border crossing between Tijuana and San Diego, in 2001, 110,075. In 2017, 26,086, a 76% drop. So, look, so what you're talking about is taking a problem that's out of control and making it's something that is manageable with what you have. So again, hopefully, General Kelly said that, hey, I believe we have the votes in place, or at least an agreement that will solve DACA and will have the funding for the wall in, or whatever we call increased security at the border, which the president will always call a wall. And he says, look, we will get concessions in NAFTA, and we will get add fees to whatever we apply to Mexico, and we will get the money from Mexico. And he'll defend that pledge politically. So, again, there's solutions, and then there's how you articulate them politically so that you can say that you lived up to the things that you pledged in your campaign. That's the game that gets played. So, anyway, interesting stuff. John Kelly, United States Marine Corps. former sergeant. He's a Mustang. Former sergeant, crossed deck to become a lieutenant, infantry officer, huge presence in the revival of Marine Corps, in maneuver warfare in the Marine Corps, always a reader, always an inspirational guy. There's generals like Craparata in the Marine Corps today, Osterman in the Marine Corps today, retired Colonel Phil Smith, that worked with General Kelly that are absolutely devoted to him and know what a difference he made in their careers, that they became professionals working for him as he challenged them intellectually to be up to the task and to be smarter, produce better lieutenants and all that stuff. So very, very cool. Anyway, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Apple deal that's coming back to the United States, and then I want to play some clips from Elizabeth Smart, and then Mike Musselman will join us. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio on a Thursday coming up right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts with 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. Battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
At SimplifyFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Thank you.
8:39 on a Thursday. Mike McNamara with you. Allmarine Radio continues. I want to talk about Apple announced a deal yesterday that pretty amazing. So we'll talk about it. So much discussed, not in political campaigns and then in businesses is the subject of offshore money and companies because of American tax policy, you know, choose to stash money and not bring it back in the United States where it could do some good and create jobs and things like that because the our tax policies are too drastic, right? So articles in the Wall Street Journal, the title is Apple to pay $38 billion in taxes on overseas cash to build a new U.S. campus. Apple recently said it had $252 billion in cash or cash equivalents overseas. Wow. Yeah. That's a quarter trillion, folks. That's a quarter trillion dollars. So I want to talk about this. Apple yesterday, and again, this propelled the market over 26,000 yesterday. Apple said it would pay a one-time tax of $38 billion on its overseas cash holdings and ramp up spending in the United States as it seeks to emphasize its contributions to the American economy after years of taking criticism for outsourcing manufacturing to China. The world's most valuable publicly traded company laid out its plans Wednesday in a statement that was full of big dollar figures, though it said that much of the money reflected Apple's current pace of spending. Apple said it would invest $30 billion in capital spending in the U.S. over 5 years, that it would create more than 20,000 jobs. The total includes a new campus, which initially will house technical support for customers, and $10 billion towards data centers across the country. It will expand from $1 billion to $5 billion, a fund established last year for investing in advanced manufacturing in the United States. Apple's $38 billion tax commitment is the largest such sum announced in response to the major overhaul of the U.S. tax code that President Donald Trump signed into law late last year. The law included an incentive for U.S. companies to bring home offshore holdings, with companies required to pay a one-time tax of 15.5% on overseas profit held in cash or other liquid assets. U.S. companies have long pushed for such a change to enable them to repatriate overseas cash without what they considered an excessive tax hit. Apple on Wednesday cited the tax change as the reason for its $38 billion payment. It didn't know how much of its $252.3 billion in overseas cash holdings it plans to bring home, though it will be the vast majority, according to Chief Executive Tim Cook, who told that to ABC in an interview yesterday. All right. Now, the thing there's an interactive little thing that goes with the story, and what the interactive thing is, it's a estimated repatriation tax that is going to be paid. According to the Wall Street Journal, this is just the first of a series of companies that will go ahead and announce that they are bringing that they are bringing money back into the United States based on what just happened. It's estimated that Apple is the first tech company, their $38 billion, but the overall tax penalty to be paid by tech companies is $104 billion. $104 billion that the United States will accrue almost as a windfall from companies estimated that will bring money back in the United States. That's the largest sector number, $104 billion from the tech sector. Next is the healthcare sector, which brings back about half of that, $51 billion. The federal government will accrue as the healthcare industry brings money back to the United States that has heretofore been overseas. After that, you have consumer companies, right? Companies that manufacture consumer items, $32.7 billion. After that, you have industrials, manufacturing, $28 billion. After that, you have finance, bringing back another $20 billion. And then energy, $13 billion. So with that, add that up, right? 104 plus 51 plus 33 plus 28 plus 20 plus 13. That's $250 billion. That's $249 billion as estimated by the Wall Street Journal. So, anyway, I keep seeing on TV that tax cut will poorly serve the country. But when the market goes to 26,000, and I think what we're learning is if the appropriate conditions exist in the United States, then guess what? Business will grow. But if you tax it to the point where you can't do business, then you get what you get. But pretty amazing, eh? And it's an interesting lesson that America is learning on the fly. What? Conservatism? What is that? You know, might this actually work? What? I don't understand. What is this? What is this? So give me the concept again, right? Limited government, only regulate where necessary, and allow the private sector to do its thing? Well, that's certainly interesting. It's not the way I understand it or have ever experienced it. Yeah, no kidding. Because it's not the way we do it anymore. It is government programs. It's the government involved in everything. Get out of the way and allow what made this country what it is today. Guess what? Government programs didn't make the United States what it is today. American engineers, American entrepreneurs, American business people did. So, but again, I think that you have a generation growing up that doesn't know that and is looking at this weird thing that's going on in the country. Well, wait a minute. What is it? Connect the dots for me. How does this work? Yeah, it's called getting out of the way of business. All right, I want to talk about mental health here for a minute. And I specifically want to talk about, when we talk about post-combat related mental health, we talk about a variety of issues. And one of the things that has come up in this discussion has been, resiliency and post-combat related, post-combat related growth, post-traumatic growth, that there's some people that come back and grow from these experiences, others turn inward, only can focus on their damage and their pain and can't get out of that. Now, some of those are medical conditions and have to be addressed, you know, because they have damaged brains and things like that. Some of them, though, are behavior issues. All right. And so a few weeks ago, maybe a month or two ago, Mike Musselman told me about this show on Lifetime about Elizabeth Smart. The other night it was on. I missed probably the first 10 minutes of it. But I want to play for you the clips where she speaks, her speaking parts in it, where she, not her character, but she comes into it and she talks about her ordeal. Now remember, she's kidnapped out of her own bedroom as a 14-year-old, right, by this guy who thought he was a prophet and a woman who was with him. I would look up their names, but I don't really care about their names. She's taken into the wilderness. They live in tents. She's given a smock to wear. She's raped repeatedly as she becomes one of his quote-unquote wives. Okay, so this is Elizabeth Smart. And I just want the clips aren't very long, but I want to play them for you. All right, so here she is. Here's the first one.
This whole team of people really wanted the same thing, and they wanted me involved. They didn't just want me to sign a contract and say, right, you do it. They wanted it to be a group effort, and they wanted me to feel comfortable.
She's like pretty creepy how great you guys are.
Oh, okay. Good to hear.
Elizabeth is generally one of the most poised and gracious women I've ever met, through and through.
She's so warm and so present, and I can't help but think that she is such a badass for overcoming what she overcame and for being such an incredible human being.
Now, that is the woman and the guy who play the people that abducted her. The guy plays this creepy dude that, you know, long hair, long beard, very much trying to emulate, it looks like, the look of John the Baptist. So that is her talking about why she made the film that she made. All right, here's a second clip from her.
Was I really going to sit there and watch my best friend be raped, be hurt, be abused the same way I had, go through all the same terrible things that I had?
Now, this is her talking. She had spoken evidently about her friend, her best friend, and he had decided that he was going to go kidnap her. But he goes to kidnap her, and he fails. And the story that he tells is in as he comes back is that as he opened the window, he knocked something over. There was screaming and yelling, so God had intervened. And it raises questions in her head, and here's her talking about it.
Push back the blind, crawl through the window. Something crashed to the floor. Lights come on. Start shouting. I realized God had not chosen Olivia to be my new wife.
You blocked your way. You're free of that burden now.
I'm gonna take a nap.
The Lord didn't choose Olivia. She wasn't the one. So why me? Why didn't something block his way to me?
So it's real interesting because, you know, I think you hear her talk about that, right? The randomness of life. Why didn't anything block his way into her bedroom that night? Why me? Why me? And again, this went on. She was kidnapped for close to a year.
I want people to walk away with a sense of hope because at the end of the day, bad things happen and we don't deserve them to happen. But that doesn't mean that our life is over. That doesn't mean that we need to give up or that we can never be happy again. You can go through hell and you can still have a happy ending. And you can reclaim your life. You can decide who you are.
I am.
I hope that people come out of it feeling like that gives them the courage, the strength to keep on fighting, to keep on going. Life is worth living.
Yeah, how awesome is that to hear? Again, 14-year-old, you know, who was raped, you know, repeatedly on a weekly basis, if not daily basis, sometimes at the age of 14. Let me play that again, because she talks about life is worth living.
I want people to walk away with a sense of hope, because at the end of the day, bad things happen and we don't deserve them to happen. But that doesn't mean that our life is over. That doesn't mean that we need to give up or that we can never be happy again. You can go through hell and you can still have a happy ending. And you can reclaim your life. You can decide who you are. I hope that people come out of it feeling like that gives them the courage, the strength to keep on fighting, to keep on going. Life is worth living.
Again, she's an incredible woman. And I want to thank the Gunner for turning me on to watch that, because essentially it's about her struggle. And then I'd be really curious for her to make a sequel that goes into the aftermath of it. And one of the most interesting parts that I saw was when she's reunited with her family. The night she's reunited with her family, her mother comes in, and there's a scene that shows her going into her bedroom and looking into her closet, right? And given the way she lived in the dirt, in tents, right, squatting to go to the bathroom, eating whenever that guy brought food to him, drinking water as they could find it. She's walking into her bedroom, right, this place that she used to live and was away from for so long. She goes into her closet and she looks at all of her clothes. And it's just this crazy contrast between the life she lived and then the life she returns to. And you see her looking at it. And her mother comes in and says, hey, your dad and I have decided that we're all going to sleep in our room tonight, kind of a slumber party. And she looks at her mother and she says, Mom, this is my bedroom. I'll be fine here. And she gives her mom a big hug and a kiss. She says, I'll be here in the morning. Don't worry. And it's very, very powerful scene, but an incredible woman.
I got him to take me back to Utah. I had learned to use his own tricks against him. Manipulation. I forced myself to be likable. I forced myself to keep going when every part of me wanted to give up.
Doesn't hurt me. You wanna feel how it feels. You wanna know that it doesn't.
That's how I rescued myself.
It very much reminds me of some of the things you heard said by prisoners of war about how they moved on. And you know, one of the interesting things about prisoners of war is that they have a very, very low incidence of post-traumatic stress disorder. That they have somehow or other made peace with the events that they've seen and that have happened in their life, which is kind of interesting, because she's very, very much the same as that experience. But here's another cut. There's two more cuts.
That night, as he did every night for the last 9 months, Brian David Mitchell raped me, but it was the last time. I feel like I'm confident in who I am, and I'm happy in my life, and I'm where I'm supposed to be, and I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I have a family now, but being involved in child advocacy and seeing change happen and wanting things to change for the better for survivors and victims, and that still is a very big part of my life, because I haven't forgotten what it feels like to be abused, to be hurt, to be taken away from everyone and everything you love. I never want my children to go through that, and I never want anybody else to. And so for those people who do go through that, I want to make sure that I'm doing everything that I can to see that it doesn't happen, to put a stop to it as best I can.
How about that? I mean, the start of that is chilling. That night, she talks about her being raped, right? And then you could almost hear the joy in her voice when she says, but that was the last time he would rape me. And it gives you some sense of the depth, right, that somebody goes to in their life, when you can hear almost the joy and happiness in her voice when she says, and that was the last time, speaking of her, you know, being raped. So listen to that one more time. I just find it an incredible piece of audio.
That night, as he did every night the last 9 months, Brian David Mitchell raped me, but it was the last time. I feel like I'm confident in who I am, and I'm happy in my life, and I'm where I'm supposed to be, and I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Pretty amazing. And then the final cut of her... as the program ends, ultimately she convinces him, he was talking about going back east. They were in rural San Diego County, and they were talking about going back east, and she convinced him, as she said, she had learned this phony-ass religion that he had made up, his role of a prophet, blah, 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 blah. She had convinced him that they should go to Salt Lake City. So they're in Salt Lake City at they go into a store, and his routine was, you know, he would steal stuff at a store. He had these big kind of satchels that he wore over his shoulders, and he just walked through the store and put things in. And I don't know, I'd have to read up on the whole story, whether somebody saw them and grew suspicious because she was younger, she had a wig on and sunglasses, or if the police were simply called because he was shoplifting. But the police pull up outside the supermarket, and they say, hey, stop. And there's, I want to say, three cop cars. And so he says, hey, I'm just a reverend. These are my disciples, blah, blah, blah. We're just passing through. And they look at her and they say, what's your name? And he says, her name is Sriracha, or whatever he had named her. And the cop looks at him and says, we're not talking to you. And with that, she's still like looking at, you know, she's glancing at him, not sure what to do. And they then take her and they move her away from him. And they ask her, and she still keeps looking over her shoulder. And then one of the cops looks at her and says, are you Elizabeth Smart? And she looks at him again, I guess trying to dramatize that even though she was with the police, she was still afraid because of all that he had been told. He had told her, hey, look, I got you in your bedroom. I'll come kill your family. And so then she looks at the police and says, yes, I'm Elizabeth Smart. And so it's pretty intriguing. But after that, and after the scene where she's reunited with her dad initially at the police station, then her mom comes down, and then her family, this is kind of the epilogue or the ending of it.
Why did I tell you this story? Those posters on the wall, the children like me, the others who have it worse, the ones who don't come home. I wanted to tell you, as someone who has been through hell, that there still is hope. find the miracle, hold on to it, and keep going. I'm not cracked. I'm not shattered. I am Elizabeth Smart.
Yeah, no, just so if you get a chance, and again, what it's about, it's a story about hope, and it's about survival, it's about coping, it's about the randomness of life, a lot of stuff that combat veterans deal with. But for whatever reason, as a young woman, and by any measure, Elizabeth Smart should not be able to take that. Right? By any measure that you evaluate it by. For a 14-year-old to be kidnapped and to be treated like that? No. Too much. Just too much. So she's an exceptional woman. Obviously, you know, you hear the things that she says, you know, and that life is worth living. And you can reclaim yourself. And there is hope. Find a miracle and keep going. So anyway, Mike turned me on to that. Wanted to share it with everybody out there. Cause I know everybody goes through it in their life. And especially those of us who've fought in conflicts and seen stuff that we would probably in retrospect rather have not seen. But it's our privilege to fight for the United States of America. It's certainly in our case, it's our privilege to be Marines. But Elizabeth Smart speaks to all of us. You can do it. Life's worth living. There are people that certainly have it worse than you. So reach out to your friends, get the support you need, get the help you need, and keep living your life because, as Elizabeth Smart said, life is worth living. All right, we'll take a break. Mike Musselman joins us next. Don't touch that dial. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.